hereby introduced to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, hey, welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you're a UK-based seller, whether you're selling in Amazon USA or Amazon UK, and private labelling your products. We don't really deal with retail arbitrage here, but if you want to know more about private labelling, you're in the right place. So welcome back. Sorry that I haven't been around very much. It's been a very busy month. In December, particularly, of course, because it's been crazy times on Amazon. Now, I can share some fun things with you to say about what I've been doing with the business. First of all, about the podcast, just to say the iTunes review contest is now finished, and I'll be revealing the winners in the next episode. Sorry for the delay on that. I just want to make sure I'm fair to everybody and that I sort that out properly. So the next thing to say is don't be a stranger. There's over 100 people now in the Amazon Facebook group. If you want to join that, just go to amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book, and do join us there. We're getting questions in quite frequently there. I'll do a little bit of Q&A at the end of this episode, and somebody's left a voicemail for us, which is great. Do leave a voicemail for me to answer on the podcast. Just go to www.amazingfba.com/ask if you want to do that. Okay, so I must say that I've had a good December with sales ramping up. Hope that's been true for you if you've been launched already. If not, then now is quite a good time to pause and reflect, because I think the next big wave of selling, if last year's anything to go by, will be back in February rather than in January. But I've sold just over $9,000 worth of products in the US Amazon, with three products live in 30 days. And in the UK, it's £3,800 in the last 30 days and just climbing. So that's just over $15,000 in total sales, which is nice. And obviously, that's very heartening. And I've learned a great deal from it. And it looks like a great success. Some of that, though, if you dig a bit deeper in terms of profit, is a success and some isn't. So today I'm going to deal with a boring but extremely important issue of money. Well, I say boring. I mean, that's not boring if it's your money and you're making it. But basically, I'm talking about money clarity, the basics of accounting, and making sure, above all, that you're monitoring profit and loss and that you're differentiating between profit and loss and cash flow. They are not the same thing in an inventory-based business. And for those of us who, like myself, have come from a service industry background, so, you know, I do consulting and coaching, and I charge my time out at a certain amount per hour. I've got hardly any overheads, and I certainly don't have any cost of goods sold because I'm just charging my own time out. I don't have to buy my time first. If I had an agency where I was buying other people in at, say, you know, $100 an hour and charging them out $400 an hour, then that would be more relevant. So it's not a business model that I'm familiar with or hadn't been familiar with before I started my Amazon business. So that's a big adjustment. So that's one thing we've got to deal with. So here we go for money clarity, the basics of accounting, and how to make sure that your business is actually making you a profit. Okay, let's get started with the basics of accounting. Now, I've attempted to make this podcast more than once today, and I've realized in the process of trying to talk through this stuff that there's a lot that I don't quite understand at the level that I really should as a business owner, especially a business that's now turning over $15,000 a month. Or, okay, this has been a peak month, but even if that averages out at $10,000, that's going to be over $100,000 in turnover. So it's probably time I understood what's going on more. So if you're in that boat, I would strongly advise you to get a book about the basics of accounting. And I can see my book right here that I found quite a useful little one called Understanding Small Business Accounting by Phil Stone. I'll make a note in the show notes. And also, I've got a book by Penny Lowe, who is also my financial consultant and accountant and bookkeeper. So she's a 3-in-1. She's got an MBA, so she's qualified to know what's going on. She underwent the same ASM training, although she didn't actually get round to running an Amazon business because other things took off for her. And she also does bookkeeping. So she really is a fantastic person to know. So I would recommend her. She knows her business. Very busy lady. I've been desperately trying to get hold of her to try and get her to do more of the bookkeeping for me, which I find I get very behind on. So don't ignore this area, folks. Get some help. Equally, outsource the stuff that you recognize you're not competent at. You know, don't try and do your annual accounts for corporate tax on your own. don't be stuck if you're doing a bookkeeping and you find you just get massively behind like I do, then outsource some of it to a competent bookkeeper. Okay, you don't want to go into massive cash flow problems by spending all your money on professionals, right? There's a balance to be struck. But do not suffer alone, and do not just stay in ignorance of these financial things, because they're just too important to ignore. Okay, first, some accounting basics. There are three basic components to accounts. One is the balance sheet, the next one is profit and loss, and the other one is cash flow. Now, everybody wants to look at profit and loss because that sounds exciting, and obviously profit and loss is a really, really important thing to monitor, and I confess I haven't done enough of that, and going forward I'm going to take more and more care to make sure that profit is happening. Partly because I was in launch phase with products for a while, and I got very, very geared to launch phases, and I got very obsessed with sales figures. So the first thing they say is profit is sanity. So sales is vanity, profit is sanity, cash is king is the full phrase, I think. That's certainly true, because I've experienced that it's quite possible to make quite a lot of sales on Amazon and not make much profit if you don't really keep an eye on the figures. So coming back to basics, let's deal with the balance sheet first. Oh no, it's accounting. Right, sorry, I couldn't resist a bit of a music sting there. So, balance sheet. As the name implies, the two sides of the balance sheet should balance. The first side is the assets, normally on the left, and the right side is the liabilities. Now, the first thing to say, and this is really, really important, mentality shift. If you're going to be a professional business owner and manager, you should understand that a business should be treated entirely separately from the person who owns it or runs it, or any of those other things, right? And for most of us, we own a business and we run them, right? But it's very important to separate them out so your accounting is done from the point of view of the business, not from yours. Now, if it's a company, then there's legally a separate issue as well. If your business is not constituted as a company, it's basically just you trading as X, you should still have the discipline to treat the accounts separately. So, for example, the under the liabilities is what the business owes, and the assets is what it owns. Under the liabilities, if I put £10,000 into my business, which is roughly what I put in over the last year, then the business owes me that as equity. So that is under its liabilities. In my personal assets and liabilities column, the business would show as an asset because it's something I own, okay? Probably a fixed asset because it should be around for more than 12 months. Okay, so that's a very important basic thing you've got to get your head around. And I'm only going to give you the basics because I can't get my head around myself some of the more complex aspects, and that is why I probably at some point will be interviewing my accountant for the podcast if I can persuade her. So if that's something that interests you, let me know. Go to the Facebook group and put some comments there. That's probably the easiest place to interact. So amazingfba.com/FBF, as in Frank, B as in boy, or F as in face, B as in book, of course. Now, balance sheet. Under the assets, we have two basic types. Current assets, which is things that are around but potentially used up within 12 months, and fixed assets or long-term assets, which are things that are last for more than a year. Okay, fixed assets will include things like vehicles, property, machinery, etc. Now, my business doesn't own any of those, although I do, so that's one thing where your business is probably going to be different from your personal finances. Under the current assets, you're going to have cash in hand, and for a business, you're probably not going to have much of that unless you're paying your suppliers in cash for some reason. You're going to have money in the bank account, and you're going to have inventory, i.e. stock, right? Whether that's in a Chinese warehouse being prepared for being shipped, or whether it's flying over the ocean in an air freight, or whether it's an FBA inspection, or whether it's at Amazon, that is still yours until the point where a customer pays for it. So that is something you've got to keep a track on, and that's one of the really tricky things in an Amazon business, but that is a very necessary thing. That's very, very different from in sort of personal life or working as a freelance consultant, or basically any time when you sell your time for money, which is when you're selling services, which the majority of us do, and that includes you if you're an employee as well. So that's the balance sheet. Okay, now there's music sting there. Profit and loss. Now, profit and loss is where it can get very, very confusing if you're used to a business which is, again, service-based. For example, if I sell my time as a pianist to go and play for somebody's wedding, then I might sell it for £250 for the afternoon, and I might have a £25 in cost in petrol and wear and tear on my car. So the whole side, there is a very strong relationship between the cash that comes in and the profit, right? There's not much overhead. There's not much direct cost. So the travel there would be counted as a direct cost because it would be incurred only if I actually take work. Overheads might be the cost of rent of my house, in which I can claim a part of it for business because it has a piano in it and I only use that for practice. That kind of thing, which a lot of us, if we are freelancers, would be familiar with. Then, of course, in a business which involves inventory like this does, that is a very, very different thing. So profit and loss simply means the change in value of the equity that a business owes to its owner, okay? Now, of course, profit and loss is a very, very basic and important thing. So it gets split out and is divided up into, you know, income, and then you've got your overheads, and then you've got the cost of goods sold. So cost of goods sold is basically direct costs, and as my accountant put it, Penny Lowe, she said that it's basically something you wouldn't have paid out if you hadn't made a sale, which is kind of really simple rule of thumb, which I like the simplicity and the power of that. There are many, many costs, such as landed costs, the unit manufacturer, the box, the freight, etc. We'll get into that a little bit later in the podcast. But just know that profit and loss means the change in value of the company as a whole, really, over a period, which might be over a month, might be over a year. And there are different types of accounts as well, so that we'll talk about that in a second as well. The main thing you've got to do with an Amazon business is not just look at the cash that's coming in and the cash that's going out, but look at the value of your inventory as well. Make sure you add the two together so that you get a true value of the assets as well, so that you know at any given point what the balance sheet is really. And one thing I should have said is the balance sheet is a snapshot of the business at any given point, whereas the profit and loss is over a period of time. And basically the profit and loss is the difference between, say, if I want the profit and loss for December for my business, I would look at the difference between the balance sheet on the 1st of December and the balance sheet on the 31st of December, and just look at the difference between the two. That's in essence what it means. So it's really, this is a mental shift, and I'm still exploring what this fully means, and it's something I need to talk through with my accountant. But the meaning of a profit and loss is just a change in the value of equity of the business. And I think that that's quite a useful way of looking at it, because it forces you to look at the big picture and look at the business as an asset in and of itself. Is it more valuable now than it was a month ago? Is what I've done adding value to the business? Is it making it a more valuable asset? Should I wish to sell it? Or at least, is it producing cash flow is another question, right? Which brings us to the third area, cash flow. Flow, the bane of all entrepreneurs. So now, if you're a bit hazy about balance sheets and even profit and loss, I mean, profit and loss haziness is a little bit dangerous, folks, but cash flow, if you don't watch cash flow like a hawk as an entrepreneur, you're really asking to go out of business. So we'll talk a bit later, possibly even another episode, if this one's going to be very long, about exactly how to start up with finances. We have talked a little bit about what's required up front in a different episode, so I won't I'll reference that in the episode as well, what is needed. And I talked about that in another episode, what's, you know, mentality is needed, what kind of money is needed, whatever. But undercapitalization is one of the big causes of business failure, okay? The other one is not monitoring cash flow and keeping it, you know, making sure that you are, you know, really aware of how much cash is going to come out of the business. Now, the point I want to make here is the difference between cash flow and profit. Okay, so the cash flow is really just simply how much money you have in the bank now, how much is going out in a given period, and how much is coming in a given period, and is there net cash flow out or cash flow in? Now, it's very normal for a business to be cash flow negative in its beginning phases. In fact, it's almost unavoidable unless you have a really cool business model. But that's certainly not the case in this business model, where you have to invest money up front in inventory before you have any inventory to sell, right? So that means that there will be a period of cash flow negative, that is cash going out of the business more than it's coming in. And that is probably going to be the case as well during the first month to even 3 months with your first product, even if it then takes off. And there's also, of course, always the possibility that your first product won't take off. So treat your first product order as a test. So don't overorder. See if it sells. If it does, then go back and order a decent amount of inventory. And then you may at that point get to cash flow neutral and then into cash flow positive. The actual profit for the business as a whole could take 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. And just bear in mind that most entrepreneurs think that business is going to be profitable within 3 to 6 months. These are the statistics I read a while ago. And actually, the reality is normally it takes at least twice as long as that. Okay, and a lot of businesses don't make it past the first year, of course. You know, the famous statistics, I think it's 9 out of 10 businesses fail within the first 3 years, maybe it's 5 years. You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's you know, a really frightening statistic. And one of them is simply, one of the reasons is simply because they are undercapitalized. And also that's because they made optimistic projections about cash flow. And that is never a great idea. So if in doubt, double the amount of money you think you're going to need to do things. And then if that means that you can't go in big time, go in small. You know, start off with a small order of units, get a minimum order quantity of non-branded products, see if they sell. If they sell, then go back, order some more, allow plenty of money for giveaways, which can cost quite a lot. The value of each product plus the Amazon giveaway costs, you know, weight or weight handling, fulfillment, etc. And then allow for plenty of money to spend on Amazon advertising as well. The rule of thumb that came from James Watson of Daniel Wagner and James Watson, the Millionaire Academy, is that if you spend $6,000, say, on inventory, you should spend $3,000 to $4,000 on marketing. So 60-40. That's probably about right. I mean, 50-50 might be an even safer way to put it. So if you spend £3,500 getting a bunch of inventory to Amazon and ready, that includes all the costs, which we'll get into in detail, then you want to be looking at spending another £2,500 on giveaways and marketing over the next period to sell those actual products. Okay, so now let's talk about different types of accounts. This is a very quick one. Annual accounts, management accounts, and projected accounts. Annual accounts are the things that you're normally forced to do by the Inland Revenue in this country or the IRS if you're based in the US. And that means that you have to do your corporate tax return if you have a corporation that you own, a company, which is what I do and what a lot of us do, or you have to include your company in your personal annual tax return if that's what you're doing. I wouldn't recommend that. In the UK, it's pretty quick and easy to set up a company. You will need an accountant to be involved in the corporate tax side, and it's a little bit more complicated and you have slightly more onerous record-keeping duties. However, if you're going to be spending tens of thousands on inventory every few months or every year or whatever, even every month, if you're really going for it, then I would suggest strongly that you have an accountant involved anyway. You don't want to fly blind, as I've said before. So that's a small aside, but the types of accounts and annual accounts, you either have corporate tax return or an individual tax return. Then two areas that often are neglected. One is management accounts, which is when you might, for example, once a month, see what your balance sheet is. You know, just go through all your bank accounts, add up all the money that's available, go through all your inventory, make sure you value the inventory and see how much you have and put a financial value on it. And then you go through any debts you have as well. I mean, how much do you owe the bank, if anything, or how much does your business owe the bank, I should say. And, you know, what is your business worth? What does it owe you as its owner? Has the value of the business gone up or down? Which is basically a primitive form of profit and loss. It's not broken into segments. The second thing, of course, is monthly to keep an eye on profit and loss, which is something that I have neglected to do frequently, but I've just done that for the last sort of 30 days of sales, partly in order to do the third thing, which is project into the future what profits are going to be profitable in the future, and therefore what should I buy inventory in, and what products can I just let die because they aren't, although they may have had good sales or they may have not had good sales. If they've had bad sales, then they're not going to be really worth tying up cash in because it'll take ages for the cash to come back out of the system through sales. And even if they've had good sales and they're not profitable, then it's kind of not much point in having them really. So I have just recently decided, for example, I've got one product in the UK which has been quite profitable and had good sales. That's a fantastic one. I've got a newish product in the USA, which without many reviews, so therefore it was cheap to launch, has started to become profitable already, and the sales are pretty steady, so that's really good. And they've got two products in the USA, one of which doesn't make many sales and it's making a loss, so that's a complete dead zone. So that one I'm going to be discontinuing. Unfortunately, I've got 500 units of that, so I have to consider what I do with that over the next period, and I'll let you know. And then I've got one product which I've put loads of time and energy into, and unfortunately it's selling, and it's selling quite well, but it's selling at a loss. Now, I don't think it's going to sell in large numbers at a profitable level because the advertising cost is so huge. So if I hadn't done my management accounts for this month, that is a month by month thing, by the way, normally, I wouldn't have been able to do projections, and therefore I'd end up with a big loss at the end of a period when, you know, I actually got round to doing my annual accounts because I had to by law. And then I'd be looking at a massive loss and going, oh, wow, I really wish I'd realized this months ago. So this is the reason why management accounts or monthly accounts are a really crucial thing. And if you are in management, if you are managing your own business, then you should insist of yourself, as you would in a bigger corporation, you'd have a financial team and you'd insist on seeing the balance sheet. You'd insist on seeing the profit and loss, and you'd insist on seeing the cash flow position once a month. And that is something you really should demand of yourself at least once a quarter, shall we say, and which is practically what I've ended up doing. If you have a bigger business, if it's starting to turn over more money, as mine is now, I think monthly is the standard and is the only safe way to go. When it comes to projection, when you're starting out the business, you really need to make a cash flow projection. So in other words, how much money is it going to cost you to get into business? And as I said, I've dealt with that in another episode, so I'll put that in the show notes. And also then you need to project when is the, you know, the cash going to come back in? How many sales do you project making at what price, and in when is that going to come? Now, that is the dangerous bit of it. The costs are pretty certain because you can nail those down. The sales are uncertain. So do not make a cash flow projection that is massively optimistic. Don't be pessimistic, but just allow for the fact that you think you're going to make 10 sales a day and you maybe only make three. That's okay. That's fine if you can then have the money and time left over to invest in a second product. Don't overinvest everything in one product because you don't know whether it's going to work until you actually try and sell. Obviously, do your research, but don't put all your eggs in one basket until you know at least what those eggs are like, if you want to put it that way. I've dealt elsewhere, as I said, with the sorts of things you need to go into business, including startup requirements. But let me just briefly talk about this. First, we got sources of capital. You have the equity money, which is your money or other investors. Right. The advantage of that is that if you are asking people to give you money up front, you don't have to pay them back straight away, unlike debt. You don't have to pay them interest. The downside is they own part of your business. And if you ever want to sell it in the future, then not only are you going to lose a lot of that value, depending on how much equity you give away, but you're also going to have to negotiate with them. They may wish you to sell when you want to keep the business going. They may need the money back out of the, you know, the system at some point. They might want to buy a house, for example, or, you know, somebody gets pregnant and suddenly they have to move house and buy a bigger house. That's like a classic life event that forces people to get on with things within, you know, 9 months or fewer. So there's a very real biological deadline on that. And that might well mean that you suddenly had to sell the business when you didn't want to, or you had to buy them out of their share of the business, which might have suddenly become worth £50,000. You know, and then you've got to find £50,000 from somewhere. So equity investment with investors has its downsides. If you're with a business partner, again, all of those things apply as well. That isn't a situation I'm in, so I can't speak from experience, but I'd be very, very interested to hear if you have been in that situation. That would be very valuable for our listeners. The other source of capital is, of course, debt. So you could get a loan from a bank. The advantage is debt is easy to get. Persuading somebody to part with a load of cash in return for an uncertain return requires a lot of faith on the part of an investor. It requires a lot of selling, if you like, from you. And if you haven't really got much of a track record yet at the beginning, that's harder to get. The bank will lend you money. Again, they want to see a bit of a track record, but they're more likely to lend you money because they're going to be higher in the queue. Creditors are first in the queue if you go bankrupt, if your business goes bankrupt, rather. And it's a downside to think about, but it's a reality that banks think about all the time when lending to a new business. The downside, of course, you know, it's easy to get is the upside. The downside is that it's going to cost you definite money You have to give the money out pretty much, you know, straight away or at the end of 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is that they'll give you as a sort of repayment holiday, if any. And then, of course, overall, it's going to lose you money in terms of interest. So that has a downside as well. You could get a loan from your family, and that might be a slightly softer approach. A lot of people seem to do that in certain cultures. I know that South Asians are very big on that sort of thing. They keep things within the family. Of course, it depends on how your family relationships are. It's kind of handing power to somebody else potentially in your family, and that could be an issue for you if you have issues with your brother or your sister or your mother or whatever. That's a whole psychological thing. The other thing, of course, is that if you have a loan to somebody and the loan goes bad, which is not unlikely with a small business, then that has really put pressure on that relationship, and it could really, really hurt that relationship. So that's something to think about. Some people seem very comfortable with getting loans from their family. I'm personally somebody who's very wary of that. Now, overall, I would say if you can afford it, it's best to not have equity investors sharing with you. You might have a business partner with you, but they're intimately involved in the business. That's a bit different. A lot of very successful Amazon businesses are indeed partnerships. So that seems to be a very good model. Having outside investors, I'm wary of. I haven't done it, so that's my take on that. And then again, debts increase risk, although if you've got a really good cash flow going, your bank will be more willing to lend you more money, and also it makes more sense because you've got a machine that is producing positive cash flow that can pay for your debts, and it can expand more quickly. Again, I think that's a very risky thing to be doing, especially as a new business. I just wouldn't go there. If you've got a year's trading behind you and it's going extremely well and you want to expand aggressively and fast, by all means, consider that. That's my take on that. The best way to finance expansion of your business, as Seth Godin says, who is a bit of a business guru these days for multiple reasons, but a very common sense guy. He's run his own businesses. He's been a consultant as well for years. Got a big name blog. He's like about, you know, one of the top business bloggers in the world. And he says, get your customers to finance your expansion. I would agree with that if that's at all possible. Okay, so there's some money basics, part one. I'm going to split this off into two parts because I think there's quite a lot to absorb here. There's quite a lot of detail. It's quite nitty gritty stuff. The next part is going to be very specifically about Amazon and exactly what you need to do to, you know, what costs you're going to incur at Amazon and what cash flow implications that has as well. And then also we're going to be talking about ad costs, accounting software, and how to use accounting professionals as well. So it's got a lot to deal with there. This is a very detailed topic area, so it could be that I will pop up an example of a couple of spreadsheets, which I'll remove any names of products, but which you can get some actual up-to-date figures of my own of both the profit and loss calculations I've made for my products over the last 30 days, and in order to help me make then some projections and then decide what I'm going to be buying. So they're very practical things, the management accounting side of it, if you like. So that's it regarding the content this week of Money Clarity, Money Basics. This is part one of two, and I'll get the second one episode out in the next few days. Now, I'm very pleased that we have a listener question that I want to answer as part of a segment, which I hope will become more and more part of the podcast, Listener Q&A. Okay, our question this week is from John Shaw, who's got a question about, well, I'll let John tell you himself.
Hello, Michael. I'd like to know how you optimize keywords and searches and optimize the listing for the three points within the Amazon, the title, the bullet points, and the description, and what you do with regards to that to boost your listing on Amazon. My name's John. Really appreciate podcasts. Very well done. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, John, thank you very much for the question. I'm really happy to have people getting in touch. And so here's my answer. Basically, I'm not saying I've got the best system in the world, but I would basically use AMZ Tracker, and I would do the following. I would put my rivals through AMZ Tracker, and I would use to start with the obvious keywords in order to find who those people are. Like, for example, if you've got Silicon Spatula, I would put that into the search bar. I would also use Amazon suggestions. It might say Silicon Spatulas with an S. It might say just spatulas, etc. I would use a few words, and I would see which results keep coming up as well. So if there's one or two products or one or two names of manufacturers that keep coming up the whole time, they're your obvious rivals. I would then go to those people and take their ASIN and put them into AMZ Tracker, maybe 2, 3, 4 of them. AMZ Tracker, by the way, costs, I think, about $25 a month, but they also have a review group, a review club, and it's free to use the reviews. Obviously, you've got to pay for fulfillment and give products away, but at least it's free. Snagshot will charge you. Most other people will charge you. So for that reason, for the combinations of things, I would use AMZ Tracker. So I would put the products into AMZ Tracker. As I said, I would put several products in there and I would see what keywords they're ranking for and what the best ones are. I would also do something similar with my current product if it's already live. If it's not already live, then you don't have that option yet. And then I would go through AMZ Tracker and I would update my product listing to make sure that the title has the major keyword in it that you want, and if possible, a couple, for example, spatula, silicon spatula. And then I would make sure my bullet points cover as many of the important keywords as possible. Two things. Number one, it's a balance between Amazon's search algorithm and human beings. So don't make it completely unreadable gobbledygook. And also make sure the title doesn't become incredibly long. Keyword stuffing used to be the main thing that ASM used to teach, i.e. you just put as many keywords as you can in the title and it becomes a massive, long, unreadable mess. Amazon is very unkeen on that. You probably have a word limit or a character limit, which is often in a lot of categories now about 80 characters. You can get away with it for a while and then Amazon might slap you on the wrist. So that's a personal decision. But try and make it sort of semi-English at least. The bullet points, again, need to read like normal English but have the keywords in and there's a balance to be struck. Don't bother with the product description in terms of keyword optimization. I believe AMZ Tracker still shows you this according to Amazon's latest algorithm change update. They no longer bother to search the description at all. So that is purely for human beings. And also human beings, by the time they got to description, they'll be seeing other pictures of alternative products and clicking away from your listing. So even for human beings, I wouldn't spend too much time in the description at all. I mean, you know, you might as well put in the selling points, make sure you, you know, do your best, but don't expect it to make much difference. When it comes to the bullet points, you need to sell benefits, not features. For example, you'll never have this stick to the pan again because it's made a special non-stick Teflon, or you know, you'll find it very easy to get your sticking meat and other sticky products off your saucepan because of our special non-stick extra slice system. You get the idea. Okay, so don't get too hung up on anything about this. You're going to have to keep tweaking as you go. But my advice, to put it in a nutshell, go to Amazon, put in the main keywords, find your obvious rivals, and then go back and put them in AMZ Tracker. Take the keywords out of them that they are ranking well for and use those in your product listing, in specifically the title and the bullet points. Don't worry much about the description. That's the essence of it. I'm still learning as I go about keywords. Certainly when it comes to the advertising side as opposed to the product listing, then that's something else that you've got to continue to learn about. I would say if you want to rank for a keyword and you're finding that you're not getting many impressions on Amazon ads, then that's probably because that keyword is not appearing in your product listing, either in the title or the bullet points, remembering that the description is not that relevant. That's what I know for the moment. If I learn more, I will tell you more. Thank you very much for the question. Very, very good question. Hope that has been helpful. Okay then, folks, that's it for another week, or at least for another episode. I'll try and get my next episode out within the next few days. I'm sorry they've been a bit sporadic this last month or so, but as I said, very, very busy with the business. But hopefully that means that when I come back to you, what I do have to offer to you is based on real life experience and is therefore more valuable and will get you more money more quickly and save you wasting money and save you more of the problems. They say experience is the best teacher, and that's certainly true, but she has very high prices. She'll demand a lot of money off you, and she will also cause you a lot of stress. So hopefully I can reduce some of your stress and save you some of your money if you learn from my experience and my mistakes, as well as what works for me. As ever, I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you so much for being a listener. And thank you very much also for listening to this particular episode. As ever, if you want to get more involved, come to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FB for Facebook. If you want to have access to the videos that I've made, which will help you through some of the basics of Amazon setup and product listing and that kind of thing, then go to www.amazingfba.com/welcome. And you can give your email address, in return for which you will have access to those videos. I will be adding more over time. They will come to you drip fed by an email, although I am setting up a sort of members area on the website, which when that's live, I will get in touch with you if you're on that list. And last but not least, don't forget that we will be announcing the iTunes review contest result next episode. So if you have left a review before the end of November, you'll be part of that potentially. So do listen up for the result of that. If you have not left a review, the review contest is over, but it's also very helpful. I'm reaching out to help other people. I'm not charging anything for it now, nor will I ever charge anything for the podcast. So it would be lovely to have some Facebook love, but it would also be lovely to have some iTunes love. So go to that and leave a review if you possibly can. Other than that, thank you so much for your time. Stay tuned for part two of the Money Basics, where I'll get into specifics about Amazon. And in the meantime, thanks very much for your time. Have a great week and see you in the next podcast.